You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff. With real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Okay, okay. Listen, it's Fat Mascara here. You clicked on us for a reason. You know that this is the interview, but it's not
the
a new
interview.
The interview.
I'm
the
Jen Sullivan, by the way.
Hi. I'm just Matlin. I want to get straight to the big interview. This is not a new one, but listen, we had to do so many interviews. I don't expect you hear them all. You're busy people. But Jen and I like to resurface some of the best ones. And we thought now, during our 2-week Memorial Day summer, moment.
It was only one week we had off, technically.
Wait, what? But, we had 1 week off?
Yeah, you had two. Kind of I had one. I didn't want to get nitpicky about it, but I was working last week. We had on Prima 2, and then Elise Hu with the book, Flawless. That was last Friday.
Yes. Okay.
So now we're both on vacay. This Friday we're about
on vacay.
We have Sharon Shooter.
What a force. Who is awesome. Yes, she is a force. Jen, tell us about when Sharon came.
When Sharon came to visit, it was 2021. I remember it was yesterday. No, yeah. She is the founder of Oma Beauty and Oma by Sharon C. She was the CEO and creative director of those brands, but she actually just announced that she's stepping away from the brand. In a post on Instagram, she said, quote, "I'm going into solitude mode for most of June to do some writing, enjoy my garden, cook, spend time with close friends. All the things I've not been able to do for a while. It's time to do less and achieve more," end quote. I think there's something in the ether, actually, with regards to this. I just saw the founder and CEO of Sugar Lash Pro step down this week, and some indie brands have closed. I think we talked about this on the podcast in the past, the brand Wildcat, that just shuttered. There's just a bit of a reshuffling going on in the beauty world. But none of that diminishes the power of the brands Sharon built. And also the activism she's done. In 2020, she launched the Pull Up or Shut Up campaign, calling for other brands to publicly release the breakdown of Black employees at the corporate and executive levels. And this spring, when Oma launched its most recent marketing campaign called We See You, she alluded to the longtime goal that she's had of making the beauty world more inclusive, something we spoke with her about in this interview, which, like I said, was originally from 2021. So before we let you hear about that and from Sharon herself, I'll just leave you with something she said publicly just about a month ago that I think really summarizes what she stands for. Sharon Shooter said, quote, "Inclusivity isn't a simple problem with a simple solution. It's a long game, and both retailers, investors, and brands have to be prepared to invest in that and understand that they're going to start reaping the results in about 7 or 8 years' time." So with that, we'll see what's next for Sharon soon. But in the meantime, here's Sharon Shooter. So Sharon, hi, welcome to Fat Mascara.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, J&J.
It's our pleasure. It's funny. I want to hear everything. I know a bit of your backstory. I want to share it with our listeners. But before we get into that, since we were just talking about this offline, I was like, wait, let's just start recording. This week is one of those weeks where there's a lot of heavy news going on in the world. And I said to you, it's hard to talk about lipstick on days like this. And you had a really good response, which is what?
Exactly. I think, definitely with everything that's going on in the world, but what makes it a bit easier for me and my team is that every day we're not coming around and selling lipstick, right? We're not just selling eyeshadows. Everything we do is steeped in trying to make the world a better place. So when we're innovating, you know, I told you an innovation I'm working on today and I'm looking and reviewing even for next year. And it's looking at, hey, historical figures, how did they make it better? What was the quote? Let's make sure it's right. What was the moment in time? And all of that just really helped you really, you know, focus on, to be honest, when I look at what's happening in the world for me, it's just a reminder on why we must not stop, right? Why this is really what matters, not the lipstick, right? And the makeup for me is my avenue, is my channel. I tell people, if I could write a song, I would have released an album to talk about this or to make it better. And so I think for myself and my team, that's what makes days like this a bit, you know, a bit easier to navigate through. Because if we were just sitting here making products and trying to figure out, is Kylie Jenner going to like it, right? On a day like this,
yeah,
really, is that really important? But when mm-hmm. you're creating things and the goal is about how can we use this to unite, right? How can we use this, like the collection I'm working on, we're actually using that to raise money for a community, to support the community, right? So when you yeah. actually are focused on things like that, days like this just fire you up in a positive way, in that it makes you even more focused and determined.
Yeah, Jess, and I want to ask you about some of the mission built into the beauty brands that you've built and your activism. But before we get into some of that, I feel like we have to let our listeners get to know you and your backstory a tiny bit. How did you even get into this beauty world? You just mentioned writing a song. Like, was that like your career you didn't have?
Oh my God, we're going to need a lot of wine. Oh, it's not 9 o'clock yet, but let's try and navigate through this without wine. So, you know, my career, my life story has been very interesting. Everybody thinks that everything that happened to me was by plan, but everything that's happened to me has been by just it happening, right? So I started my life as an academic. I actually got into university at 15. So I was one of those quote unquote gifted scientific kids. And then I had an artistic streak. So I decided, you know what, I'm done with this whole like, you know, engineering BS. And I'm going to go become Beyoncé, you know, I want to.
So there was, okay, there was a singer inside you.
There was okay. a time where I was performing, recording music. And so I spent a lot of time doing that. And that's actually how I came into beauty, because very quickly you realize that music does not pay the bills. That's the truth about music. And you actually do need a day job until you become Meg Thee Stallion, right? And so I needed to go find a day job and fast. And I had dropped out of uni at the time, at my parents' absolute dismay, because they were just thinking I was having a teenage crisis or something like that. Oh, you know what? She got a lot of things too quick and she can't handle it kind of thing. And so I needed to find something to do. And at the time I was like, hey, the other thing I'm passionate about other than music is makeup. I love wearing makeup. There were no makeup brands in my country. So long story short, through sheer craziness, I brought Revlon to Nigeria as a teenager. And so...
Wait, what do you mean you brought Revlon to Nigeria as a teenager? That's kind of like... You just dropped that.
I know, though. So at the time, you know, we had a lot of like, you know, MAC was huge in Nigeria, but none of the brands were officially in the country, right? It was just... Women will go overseas. Like, I mean, travel retail probably have their budgets. They were making it from Nigerians because you just stuff up your suitcase, bring it back home and then sell it at a premium. Right. And so for me, it was like, well, why don't we have these brands directly in the country? And as a teenager, you don't understand why. Right. You don't care. And that's the beauty about being a teenager. You're naive. Right. So I reached out to almost every brand I could muster or find the email address. That was at the early days of the internet. So thank you very much. And of course, every brand told me in the most polite way to like fuck off that they could. And the only brand that sort of responded and were interested was Revlon. And they had been trying to enter the market for 16 years. Now, they didn't know I was a teenager. I was pretending because I was working at the time with a distribution company. I was pretending to be like this high up there. And so they engaged with me. And next thing you know, I actually, out of craziness, there was a regulatory issue that made them not be able to come in. And I walked into this office, knew nobody, spent a whole day, ended up finding a loophole and how to bring them in. And I became the official distributor of Revlon. So that was actually my first business. And when everything happened, I ended up coming clean to go, hey, I'm a teenager. I don't know what I'm doing. And so they were actually kind enough to actually, I essentially sold the license to an actual company who could do the work. So that was my first time, you know, creating a business and flipping it. And it's also the reason why I came into beauty full time, because I then realized that this dichotomy and this kind of clash I've always had in my life, where I've been this incredible academic person, but at the same time, incredibly artistic, I found a home where I could merge both of them that was not either or, right? I found that in beauty, I thought I could be creative and also use my academic and commercial acumen. And then through that whole process with Revlon, I realized I also have a hustle.
Did you ever think of like selling this or like writing a movie script with your situation with Revlon? Because I feel like this is some kind of crazy like hijinks comedy, like where the kid is on the phone and then it's just a kid. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like this is a crazy comedy. Like the kid is the behind the business. Do you know what I mean? This is ridiculous. It's a kid running the business.
Exactly, right? You get to the end and realize it is this, like, literally.
It's a little kid that's, like, a cosmetics, like, this is, like, a hysterical, I don't know, this is a script to me. This is a complete, like.
We just created it now. Like, there you go. Let's make, put it together and sell it to Netflix.
This is a movie. I don't understand why this is not, like, your next order of business. Because before you even had a career, this is like, I don't know. That's tremendous. Okay, keep going.
No. I mean, most of my life is wild, right? And everybody always jokes about it. You know, anybody who knows me always says, nobody can write a movie about your life. It has to be a series because each one of them, each chapter in your life is a whole entire movie of its own. So for some reason, I tend to have drama follow me everywhere. And I'm also crazy. I do crazy things. But that was quite literally how I got into the beauty industry. And then I decided that instead of pursuing the entrepreneurial kind of pathway, I was going to take a step back, go work for companies, learn, and then maybe one day found my own business. And that's really my story.
Okay. All right. So, So you're in, sorry, I'm still stuck on you being like basically an imposter child, like cosmetic executive in Nigeria. But then you've started your own, like you properly got into the cosmetics business in the U.S. Now take us there because then you started working like properly for multiple different cosmetics brands. Take us through that a little bit because I want to run through your, but we all know that you are now your own like proper entrepreneur, but you did your time with, you know, like you're a major beauty industry veteran. So just walk us through your resume a little bit.
Yes, no, absolutely. You know, so once I decided I was going to, you know, go start from scratch, you know, I'm one of those people who have a very different approach because a lot of people will just continue an entrepreneurial journey. I'm all about, you know, start from the bottom and you're going to, the journey is what matters, not actually the result, right? So I went back and I started working for companies. I worked for different multinationals, L'Oreal, you know, I left beauty for a while. I went to work for PepsiCo. I worked in pharmaceuticals. And then I came back into LVMH and Benefit Cosmetics where I had my first real executive role. And at that point in time, that was, you know, I had done what I wanted to do in corporate, to be honest, beyond what I thought I would be able to do in corporate life. But at the same time, at the start of my career, all that mattered to me was making money. Get your bag was the mantra, right? And breaking the proverbial glass ceiling. And when I got to the later part of my corporate life, it just didn't matter to me anymore.
Did you like corporate life? I don't really see you. I mean, we haven't known each other a long time. But I just don't see your like spirit really.
I'm a free spirit. I'm a very outspoken person. I'm a person who asks why. That's just innate. I mean, it's actually been the success of my brand, right? All the things that made me a terrible employee and you know, corporate is all about the factions and diplomacy. And I'm not good at that stuff. I always say to people ask me all the time, especially being an activist now, you should go into politics. You have ideas. And I say to them, you should know the difference between a politician and a warrior, right? I'm not built to pontificate. That's not what I do, right? My thing is I'm the person who stirs things up, right? I'm the revolutionary. Mm. And I always tell people the revolutionary should never be the actual person who sits on that throne because it's two different skill set, right? Fidel Castro was an incredible revolutionary, shouldn't have sat there. You know, he should have handed out power, right? You know, that's me. And that's why corporate life wasn't really my cup of tea, right? But I did it. I put my head down, and this is what I always say to people when I advise kids and whatever. sometimes you've got to go through that because I wouldn't do it any differently. That was a gift to me. It taught me so much. It taught me even about myself, how to actually assimilate. Unfortunately, I assimilated too far, right? It taught me how to flex my style, how to work with people. I couldn't have run the company I'm running today and get a success in 2 years, if not because of the 14 years I spent in corporate life, right? So I still owe a lot of who I am today for the journey and the experience and the story. And like I said, I'm a person who values the journey and the process more than the result in the end. So yes, I did the whole corporate life thing. And for me, I gave it up because I had assimilated too far. It was just too far.
Is corporate life really just about assimilation in your mind?
It is. It is about, you know, it's almost like, think about it, corporate life, formal education, everything is about conformity. Right? The ones who conform the most are the ones who, if you're in school, the kids who are the star students are the ones who were the conforming, right? If you had a kid who could learn, but not in the way the teacher was teaching, you get classified as unintelligent, but you're not intelligent. You're just in the wrong kind of ecosystem, right? And that's what corporate life is like. You have to really, the rules of engagement, and now they're getting better. You know, even my hairstyle, I couldn't wear this in my corporate career. I was literally expressly told by the MD at the time, oh, braids are ghetto and very career limiting, right?
And I don't know which job you're talking about, but like it's you were never working in like corporate finance, which is like so crazy,
right?
To me. You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Not that that's industry. Okay in corporate finance. I'm not condoning that for corporate finance, but it's just so crazy to me. Yeah.
But it was just, this is who you need to be, right? And that's the thing. Yeah. Most corporations are, the culture is very Anglo-Saxon. It's very Western, right? And I talk about even little things that people don't even pay attention to. You know, I was joking about it during my corporate career. I had to eat in my car or eat with the ethnics, because every time you were eating in the kitchen, you have people surround you. Oh my God, you eat that? Oh, it stinks. Oh my God, this kitchen stinks. So you go like, you know what? Your food stinks to me too, but you don't hear me whinging about it, right? Because I'm born with better manners. Like, you know, the world is not my oyster. I might not like it. Doesn't mean I should even comment on it. It's the same thing that happens. You bring your hair out and everybody's digging their fingers in. Why is it like this way? And you're like, because that's my hair. Like, you
that's
know,
crazy.
And I'm like, you know, imagine me just touching your hair and go like, oh, why is the texture like this? You know, so I think it's all those nuances people don't think about, like even in a micro level, that creates a very uncomfortable kind of environment for people of color in general. And then for me, you know, you have the beautiful whammy of being female, which in corporations, especially when I was there, was its own set of challenges. So now you have female, then you add being a person of color, then you add my personality that I'm a weirdo, right? Corporations are not a place for weirdos. It's not a place for misfits. It's for people who fit. That's like you have to like fit. If you're working for a French organization, if you want to get promoted, at some point you're going to have to go learn French and really fit into that lifestyle. And if you don't, there is no place for you. And so, and so for me, my corporate life was tough. I got through it by looking up to people like Indira Nooyi, who I just absolutely adore. Never met the woman. I always joke that for people that wait, if they meet Madonna, they're going to have a freak out. I'm like, no, if I meet Indira Nooyi, I'm going to be on the floor crying, like, snort coming out of my nose kind of tears, because she was actually the first female CEO of PepsiCo. And what I loved about her, why she inspired me, was she was an Indian immigrant. Right? An Indian immigrant comes to America and then ascend to that place. And the gospel, according to Indira Nooyi, was work harder, right? Just, you know, your personal color, if you're female, you just got to work to get there. And that's the handbook that I use, right? But that's also why I knew I needed to leave, because that might have been a handbook that worked for Indira and worked for myself, but that should not be the norm. Right. Mm-hmm. And also for me, working in beauty should have been a place where everybody is celebrated. It's about self-love. It's about acceptance. You know, very similar to myself, who was a weird kid who was academic and creative and was able to find a home in beauty. Everybody should be able to do that, both in the inside of the organizations and on the outside as well. And that was why I left, because I realized, firstly, I was a shadow of myself. I had changed my name, my accent, you know, assimilated to crazy degrees that just.
You changed your name?
I did. I changed my name. Yeah. My
name is... So what's your given name?
Yeah. So I was actually born Ufoma, and Sharon was my middle name. Then I brought Sharon because when you have an ethnic name, I mean, the research has been done and proven time after time.
It's not an ethnic name. It's a name. Like, it's so funny. But I get what... You know what I mean? Like... I'm offended on your behalf.
Exactly, right? You have an ethnic name. The recruiters don't even pick your CV up. They just look at it, they toss it to the side, right? Because firstly, is they assume you can't speak English, right? And they can't be bothered having the conversation, right? So they don't want Ufuoma Jemidafe. They want Sharon Chuta or Sharon Butcher, as I was at the time. That's what they need, right? So that's why for me, it was really crazy, you know, having to make those kind of big decisions that are, you think mm-hmm. about it, it's not a light decision that anybody should make in terms of changing your name. That's the core part of your identity. And you have to throw that away just so that you can get to the top. And I had to do that. I had to change my accent because the second you have an accent, you don't get far either because people can't be bothered listening to you. And, you know, in my corporate life, it was something I was really excited to do. Really, really uplifted a lot of people of color who couldn't speak really good English. And you go in there and people just treat them so bad. Nobody's willing to listen to them. And going in there, being able to sit and go, listen to what she's saying or listen to what he's mm-hmm. saying. He has the damn best idea in this room, but you can't be bothered because the person doesn't speak like you. And as such, you can't be bothered to do it. And yeah. and that's the reality of corporate life. Like sometimes people will reject a person because they don't want the embarrassment of pronouncing your name wrong. No joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
no,
they cannot
I
pronounce your name.
That.
You don't get selected. So imagine somebody losing an opportunity because your name wasn't David. Right. And that, right. Yeah. That's how crazy it is. So for me, you know, this was my corporate journey. There was so much of corporate that was really building and foundational for me and really built the person I am today. But at the same time, I understood when I got to a point in time that there was such a thing as culpability by complacency. And if I was just sitting there getting my money, getting my paycheck, going, you know what, let me just write this all until I retire, get a, you know, and I'm all good. That's not it. And just like the product I'm developing, what I wrote on the palette that people are going to see next year, is a quote from Nelson Mandela, you know, to be free is not only to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that enhances the freedom of others. That was exactly why I left corporate.
People want more. Yeah, people want more. Yes. And what were you seeking to create with
yes,
your brand?
I wanted to create a modern day hippie community, right? Wasn't that fun in the 70s? The free loving, yeah. the free thinking and everything. And that was it. Like, this is a movement of self-love. I wanted to create a space.
And that's OMA.
That's OMA
right?
Beauty, yeah. OMA Beauty is a space where everybody can feel okay being them. Right? I'm the weirdo in chief. I'm not a CEO. I'm the chief weird officer. Like, come here. Like, you know, you want to see weirdness? Come into my world. Like, right now I'm talking to you. I have a dog right next to me in the office, right? You know, so I'm like the weirdo. I'm a CEO with tattoos and all sorts of stuff, you know, I'm like literally. And I wanted to create a community where everybody can be proud to be themselves. The reasons why we are meant to feel so ashamed of ourselves is just ridiculous. It's things that we should not be ashamed of. You know, I was actually sitting in a retailer meeting. I was telling them about smoking marijuana and they were looking at me like I was an alien. And I was like, you drink alcohol? And they're like, yeah, I do. So why does that bother you? Right. You know, so it's just so funny that we live in a society that they have, there was a certain things that, to be honest, most people can't even live in because probably the person was sitting next to me going like, oh my God, marijuana. They probably smoke, but they're hiding. Right. And this is the community I wanted to create where we can all be ourselves. Like, let's drop the BS. Let's live it out there. You know, the level of hypocrisy and everything going on in the world. If you're not killing anybody, let's actually celebrate that. Like, the amount of things or the reasons we actually fight each other are ridiculous. And that's what OMA Beauty is. OMA Beauty is a place yeah. of just self-acceptance, accepting yourself. And I think that is the key to a happy life. If you can accept yourself and you can love yourself, guess what? You're good. You're good because you can then even love other people. You can then even receive love. How can you receive love when you hate yourself, right? You can't do that. And so mm-hmm. OMA Beauty is really this space because even though I talk a lot about race and whatever, ultimately what OMA Beauty is a home for everybody. And most especially for all those who've been left out, for whatever reason they've been left out, whether it's because of the color of their skin, who they love, the size of their body, their lifestyle choice. They have a tattoo. Now everybody's wearing tattoos. Remember there was a time you had a tattoo. You were like the worst human being on the planet because you had a tattoo, right? And so
yeah,
that's what OMA Beauty is about. We don't have to wait for 100 years for us to normalize things. You know, it's a community where all animals are welcome, right? Everybody goes, you're crazy. You treat
the
dog like a human.
Is that your proudest accomplishment, building that community? Or what's your proudest accomplishment with regards to your career so far?
Well, I will definitely build in this community, even though it's still work in progress. It's just seeing the way, and that was a funny thing. When I set up Omelette Beauty, I didn't think it would take, I thought it would probably be about 5, 6, 7 years before people get it. It took overnight. Like it went viral. Why? Because so many people were thinking exactly what I was thinking, right? And so for me, there is a form of just satisfaction and elation, knowing that, oh my God, the people who actually think this are actually the majority of the world. So why have we been silent? And then now just continue to ramp that up and enabling and inspiring people to speak up, be who you are, you know, wear it proudly, you know, don't care. That's a dream. Like that's a dream. And for me, it just feels like I found my purpose, right? And if my purpose is just to be me, how amazing is that, right? So yeah.
I want to ask you about what you have planned next for you and for the brand, but I have to look back for a second because you didn't mention some of your activism. And I want to mention, if that's okay, about a little bit over a year ago, you know, in the wake of George Floyd's murder, it seemed like no beauty company could say enough that they were committed to diversity and inclusion in quotes or hashtag or whatever you want. And you started Pull Up for Change. That's about when you launched it, right? And we've talked about it on the podcast. Can you explain what that movement is and where that's going now?
Yes. I mean, Pull Up for Change is a grassroots movement. It was really a movement that was set up to hold corporations accountable, right? With the end goal of creating more economic equity and equality for Black communities all over the world, right? Because we know that the state of Black communities around the world, the economic state, let's even talk, remove the socio or the social kind of aspects of it. Let's just talk about the pure economics. It's abysmal, right? We are unemployed, not because of, I mean, look at me, what I had to do to get in the building, right? It took changing my name, my accent, you know, working three times as hard as everybody else, making no mistakes, being perfect. Literally, you have to be corporate perfect for you to be selected, right? And so for me, it was an opportunity, especially in the wake of George Floyd's death, just seeing companies just turn this into a PR kind of charade, right? It was all about, I'm donating $2 million to Black Lives Matter. Who cares? Like quite literally, who cares, right? You know, this is not about donation. You cannot be coming out there when you're the root cause of the problem, right? You're the root cause of the problem. You know, the economic segregation and marginalization drives even more social segregation. Why do we have communities where white people are calling the police when they see a Black person? It's because they assume you should not have the economic status to be in that community. So
yeah, and you were asking these companies, like, show me who is working there.
Exactly. So if you're going to come out and you can release a statement and say, I support, the ultimate statement of support is to tell us how many Black people you actually hire, right? And even if you don't hire Black people, tell us how you intend to fix this, because donating to NAACP is not going to fix this problem. Hiring Black is going to fix this problem. And that's what Pull Up for Change was all about. And it was a movement of the people. Once again, it was a real viral campaign. People took to it. It was also an education opportunity for the consumer to understand that they hold the power ultimately. And if I leave here with nothing, I want that to sink into consumers, right? Companies exist for one thing, and that's your dollar. Period. Nothing else matters. Literally, is your dollar. If you think about what the consumers have been able to drive as change, look at cruelty-free is a standard now. It's no longer a subcategory. It is just a standard because the consumer said, we believe in animal rights and we believe that animals should not be used to test lipsticks, period, right? It went from a handful of brands that were niche brands being cruelty-free to now every brand being cruelty-free as a standard, right? Look at vegan. Right, in terms of formulas being vegan. Before it was impossible. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do it. Then you had a subset of brands with vegans and consumers said, nah, this is what we want. We want that every lifestyle can participate in beauty and beauty changed. So it was also a movement that educated the consumer that you can use your dollars to actually fight for the Black community, right? If you tell companies, I'm not going to support you until you show me that you are supporting the Black community economically, not by donation, economically, you are making long-lasting change, then I give you my dollar. And that was actually the strength of the movement because it really gave consumers a voice.
That was a year ago. And I saw some of these brands that they put up their numbers and everybody's like, oh God, that's horrible. Ooh. And then they put some statement like, we know we have work to do, you know?
Yes.
Because I only have 2% people of color in executive positions or whatever it is. Yes. So here we are like 16 months later. Have you checked in on anybody, or has anybody given you updates? How's it going? Like, is anybody making improvements? Are people voting with their dollars like you hoped that they would?
Look, I think when I look at Pull Up for Change, you know, a year plus later now, I sort of go, here's what I'm excited about. Like I said, the beauty community would never be the same, right? Because the consumers woke up and they started holding companies to even a higher degree. A year later, we went back to the companies. We've collected numbers. We've been sharing the numbers for the companies that have chosen to disclose. And for companies that are choosing not to disclose, we've kept it there. We continue to work and advocate behind the scenes, working with companies. We're working and trying to get the EEOC, who is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commissioner, to update the way they collect diversity report, because Pull Up for Change should not exist. You know, that's the job of EEOC, to collect diversity reports, but they make it in a way that's so generic. They're asking you about laborers, you know, and the race categorization is just weird. So we've been doing all of that work. But I would say for me, when I look at this 14 months later, has the consumer enthusiasm waned off? A little bit, and that's disappointing. You know, so we have to, all of us who have the energy, have to keep reminding people, because it's like, oh, people have done it, and you know, and then they moved on to the next thing, right? But we still have overwhelming support, but I think it's one that we can continue to push to continue to get consumers to be fully aware of the impact of their dollars and what that dollars can do. From the company perspective, there's sort of like three different stories we're seeing. The companies who are on the best sides of it are, we're working, we're trying to do all the right things. But what I'm finding with a lot of companies, they seem like they're lost. And this should not be something that makes you lost. It's very easy. Companies tell me, well, we don't know what to do. And I'm like, look at how much progress has been made in bringing women into corporations and bringing women into leadership roles, right? Now, that progress has benefited almost exclusively white women, right? So let me tell you, you knew exactly what to do when you wanted to support white women. You know that thing you did then? Do it for Black people, right?
What do you mean? What do you mean by lost? Like, there's no way they're calling you and they're saying, oh my God, Sharon, I'm lost. Like, that is so embarrassing. Are they actually
We don't know what to do. And then, you know, they have ideas and you go like, that's terrible. Like, you
but
know,
it shouldn't be your job to have to explain to other people how to make change. Like,
well,
do you get
that's
frustrated?
The world we live in. Yeah, you do. And, you know, some days it's harder than others. You know, there's been some days I've just gone, I'm going to walk away from all of this because I just can't be bothered dealing with these companies anymore. It's so sucking, right? If I'm honest, I've had some days like that where I've just been in a ball going like, these guys are actually affecting my mental health at this point, you know? Yeah. And it's true. It's very taxing, right? Because you're having conversations that you go, I shouldn't have, right? On the other spectrum, you're having a lot of performative things happening. It seems like companies only understand how to be performative.
What, you give me an example? Just because, you know, we have a lot of people who listen to the show who work in the industry, and I think it would be interesting for them to hear
what not to do.
What's something, you know, we say performative. Yeah, like what is like a good example?
Yes, I'll give you two different examples, right? So I work with a lot of companies. Everybody knew my Make It Black campaign that was all about, hey, let's raise money for the Black community and let's redefine Black, right? Mm-hmm. There are many companies that had to drop out of that program, right? And end up being like, you know, you've been aggressive or whatever. And the reason is they had no interest in what it was. I mean, they were like, oh, we love this. But all the questions was, when is the press release going to come out? Yeah, what's happening with the press? And you just sort of going, okay. And then, you know, you had some companies who were like, oh, yeah, we want to do this, want to participate. Oh, but yeah, we're going to donate $5,000 to this. And these are like
this
huge.
Was just to clarify, this is large companies giving money to small businesses that are owned by people of color.
Exactly.
Or black women, right?
To help Black women, exactly. We can't raise money. Only 0.006% of capital goes to us. And it's like, yeah, we want to support, but they want to support from the appearances of it. And when it comes to the behind the scenes, the actual hard numbers, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I want to give the least, right? Oh, but I want to spend that money instead in a marketing campaign to promote it, to create awareness. And I keep going, to create awareness for what, right? When are we going to stop creating awareness? Like, you know, there is a, we know that the community is suffering.
So give me the 10,000 that would have been on some Instagram campaign and I can give it to this business owner to as a loan, a micro loan or whatever,
to
build a brand.
To actually build this, right? So it's little things like that where I go like, you know, people always looking at that kind of surface. It was the same thing with me. And I said this out publicly and called out a lot of retailers trying to create a Black-owned section and la, 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 la. I'm going like, the goal is integration. I am saying, do not reject me because I'm Black and not just, you know, you can't do that because what you're doing is creating a psyche to that consumer who's just been introduced to the brand that all the brand is Black owned. I am beyond the color of my skin. Alma Beauty is a brand with a proposition. There is, if you want to help me, put me next to Mac, right?
Right, and what you were saying at the top of the show, you're saying that it's about, it's for everyone and it's about expressing who you are, which honestly, I've got to say, that's a message that I don't think through the press is made clear enough. And I think that's a failing of, you know, of the beauty media. Yeah.
Yeah.
And influencers and just the storytelling, and that's not on you. One thing that you said that perked my ears up, when you said the performative thing, you said that some brand partners didn't like the messaging around Make It Black, or they thought it was too much?
No, they liked it. No, they loved it. They loved the messaging because the messaging looked good, and that was what they were interested in being part of, right? They just wanted the messaging.
They wanted the press release, not the actual action.
They wanted something that made them look good for Black History Month, as opposed to even like some conversation I had of like, do you even care about the person who's on the other end of that? That you don't, right? It's the same thing. You look at right now in corporations trying to get diversity numbers, right? And you're having a lot of employees blocking it, going like, I will not give my detail. And it's like, hang on, everywhere else you go in life, you tick a box, right? You tick your hair color, you give your driver's license, you give all of your identifiers. This is just asking a question of your race, right? So you think about how disengaged people from it. When you think about the people who are refusing to tick a box in order to help the companies be better are people who are employed. They have a job. It's not their problem. So they go like, oh, you know, it makes me feel a kind of way. I'm like, the person who's on the other side without a job doesn't even have the privilege to feel any kind of way.
Right.
Literally.
You have a seat.
In jail, right?
Yeah.
They're out there on the streets getting into trouble just to get basic food, water, shelter. And you there right on top of the Maslow's hierarchy enjoying yourself and going, I'm not going to take that survey because
I'm uncomfortable.
My feelings.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of things that dishearten me so much, right?
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that I've been in some of those meetings. I've even seen employees of color challenging. Oh, how is this going to make things better? Just because you have a job does not mean that, you know, and then there's some paranoia in some places where it's like, well, my job is going to get traded off because they're going to go hire people of color, right? So you think about the degree of selfishness, right, that comes through here, which is, firstly, there is enough to go around. Firstly, right now there's a huge labor shortage. There's enough to go around for everybody. Let's start from there.
That's a very good point.
Secondly, you know, you ticking a box to help your company understand the gaps in their hiring process. If you think that is too much, then we all have to take a good look at ourselves. And you know, it's things like that that there's still a lot of work to do on every front. And that's why sometimes it seems like the work is so great that still needs to be done. You look at it and go like, oh, I just made a dent and it makes you feel happy. And then you look and you go like, it's a tiny, tiny dent. But I'm excited because I have the energy for it. So bring it on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Okay, everyone, I am one of those people who, when it comes to wellness, sorry, but it's got to fit into the pockets of my day. 5 minutes here, 7 minutes there,
when I'm like in the kitchen and I'm microwaving something long. It's got to be convenient. And that is why Alo Moves works for me. My mindset has changed. The app makes it easy for me to keep my wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place and bite-sized little bits. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, self-care tips, healthy recipes, so much more. From beginner to advanced, Alo Moves has the flow or class that's going to fit into your schedule. Their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour, depending on what you're feeling that day.
You know what feeling I'm feeling most days? I'm feeling 10 minutes. I've been doing Joanna Thompson's. Right, that's about it.
Yeah, that's good.
10 minutes. Joanna Thompson does these yoga lattes in 10. One day will be abs. One day will be arms. Today, Jess, is booty day. And we're just going to get it done all in 10 minutes. If you're trying to get a good sweat, then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like the sweat-inducing yoga flows or the reformer Pilates workouts without weights. You can also find stress relief with meditations, affirmations, face yoga, gua sha, learn to do dry brushing. How many times have we talked about dry brushing on this podcast? Alo Moves will teach you how to do it.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Alo Moves. Go to alomoves.com now and use the code MASCARA20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership. That's alomoves.com, code MASCARA20. alomoves.com, code MASCARA20.
Have occupied so many spaces in the beauty industry. You know, you were like corporate, you know, I would say corporate warrior, but maybe you would say corporate soldier, you know. you were once like a teen head honcho. You've been everything. But now just like looking at the beauty industry, just like as, I don't know, almost as like a consumer, just like as yourself, you know, just like walking through Nordstrom, walking through CVS, whatever. Like, what's your read on the whole place? I feel like it's just changed so much, like even in the past year, in the past couple years.
Yes. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of changes that's happened in the industry. I think I'll start with all the positive changes. I think the fact that these conversations are so topical now, I think that's great. The conversation, the fact we can even have this conversation so publicly, and the things I'm saying, and we're normalizing that this is okay to talk about this. Because remember, for the longest time, beauty was in a space of I don't see color, which was pretty much the introduction of beauty apartheid, right? For every mm-hmm. community of color. So I think the progress that we've had right now to get to this point is great. I love it when I go on Trend Mood and see brands launching, you know, really, you know, interesting things. So you have the whole comment section go like, oh, hell no. Like, you know, what that shade range and stuff like that. So that's really amazing. That's really good progress to see consumers watching that hard. I think it's also been good progress in retailers, especially since last year, and the awakening and the accountability and everything that we're doing, start to do more, you know, to be more accepting and start to be aware of the gaps, you know, in terms of the support for entrepreneurs of color and specifically Black entrepreneurs who you just don't find, you know, in this mainstream retailer. So I think it's been really amazing. I mean, this year I launched in Nordstrom, and to go to New York City and see the whole windows taking over and the middle, and I was able to do it exactly my way. I had like women in gele, like this is a traditional African outfit on the window, and that really made me happy to see that, because these were things that we didn't see growing up. We were so ashamed of how we looked traditionally. To see a mainstream retailer plaster their whole windows with that's yeah. strong impact, right? Because of what we're doing there. So I think when I see things like that, it makes me really happy, and it gives me hope that we're stepping in the right direction. Also, when I see the profit coming from it, because remember, the only reason people will do it is if it's profitable, right? And I'm loving mm-hmm. to see the consumers supporting more and it being profitable, which is making these retailers want to do it more. So I really love that. So I think when I look at the beauty industry today, I think we've come away. We still have a very long way to go. I want to still see a lot more done. I want to see the back end. I want to see the, you know, like I said, the employment, the artistry. We still live in an industry where beauty schools don't teach about skin of color. Think about that, right? You can mm-hmm. be certified as a makeup artist, but you don't know how to do skin of color. Actually, we live in an industry where the makeup artists who can do skin of color are classified as ethnic makeup artists, and the mainstream ones don't do skin of color, right? Whereas it should be the norm. If you cannot do all skin, then you should not be a makeup artist, right? It's not even the curriculum, right? To actually teach these people. So, you know, and that's even just the foundation of it. So we have a long way to go.
Can you speak a little bit more to that? I think that's interesting. And because you've worked with color cosmetics brands, and obviously you have a color cosmetics brand. Is that something that you are coming up against when you work with, you know, makeup artists for events or just, you know, testing products?
Oh my God. I come against it as a consumer. Even if I've been a black woman trying to book a makeup artist, good luck to you. let alone as a brand, booking makeup artists, and we always have very diverse models, and you have to always be, oh, can you do it? I mean, hairstylist is a completely
Hair
we
talk about a lot, but honestly, on this show, you know, we've been doing this show for 5 years now. I can honestly say I don't think we've discussed this topic very much. So I'm interested that you brought it up.
Yeah, exactly. No, makeup artist is abysmal, right? I don't even want to call big names, but even when you look at some of even the biggest makeup artists that we have now, the women of color, they actually worked with makeup artists who were mainstream at the time who couldn't do women of color makeup. And when they got the celebrity client, they had to give it to their assistant, and then the assistant blew up, right?
Is the assistant a person of color?
Of course it's a person of color. So in the past, it was actually relegated to people of color to do people of color makeup because they were the only ones who could do makeup for people of color, right? Up till today, there are only very few white makeup artists that can do makeup of color, period. Very few. Very, very few.
Yeah, they can look at portfolios to see the proof of that.
Exactly. Very, very few of them know what to do with black skin and black face. And they make you look all sorts of crazy. And I've worked with big makeup artists. You look crazy. Like,
have you ever gotten a makeup job where you're just like, my neck does not match my face? Or like, what happens?
Oh my God.
What goes wrong? You have a deep skin tone. What goes wrong?
Yeah. Exactly. When I got married the first time, right, we had this extravaganza of a wedding because I was very young and that's the kind of stuff you want to do, right? So at the time we got married at the Burj Al Arab in Dubai, it was still new. It was like the biggest hotel. Like, it was a spectacle. So I booked the most expensive makeup artist money could get me. Because this was my day. I was supposed to look like a complete princess, on that day. I literally, if I showed you my wedding photos from my first wedding, you will be appalled. I looked mad. The foundation was nowhere close to my shade. And this was back in the day where, to be honest, even the makeup artists wanted to, they couldn't find it, right? I was like giving like purple and silver eyeshadow that came all the way up to the top to my lids. Now, anybody who knows dark skin knows you have to run away from those kind of pale colors, right? You have to go
run away.
Warm.
Not just walk away, you gotta run away.
Exactly, from anything that's cool. My whole face was plastered in cool tones. Like, it was the very like pastel-y purples and silver.
Was the flashback on the camera?
Oh,
that probably was delightful.
I can't. This is like bringing PTSD. Like, yo, my sister, they walked into the room, and normally, you know, when they walk into the room, the bride getting her hair and her makeup done, you should have you look beautiful. My sisters were like, and I was like, oh, no, don't tell me it's one of these. And I look so mad. And they were trying to be polite. It's not that bad. But you see them like trying to wipe off whatever they can wipe off your face. But I was already
Let me blend a little.
Right. Exactly. And I paid this makeup artist, no joke, $4,500 for this makeup. Let me just tell you the caliber of makeup artist. And this was 14 years ago, imagine $4,500 all that time ago, right? 14 years ago. And I looked like a clown, like a complete, and this is okay if you wanted to look like a clown and you look like a clown. I just came out looking like a clown when I wanted to look like, something different. I can't even look at those photos. I can't, like, it's actually a good thing we got divorced because I would have had to be showing that wedding picture all the time. So I was like, okay, the good thing is that situation solved itself and I moved on. But that's how bad a woman
it's
of color
good
has it.
You
even
can
on
laugh
your wedding
about
day.
It because it's not funny. It's like, it's sad. I'm glad.
It was bad. Yeah. It was bad. It was.
Can I ask you, you made me think of this.
Yes.
With the camera, I realized, just like a couple weeks ago, you had a runway show. You did like a beauty runway show, right?
Yes, I did.
So
I did.
Congrats on that, by the way.
Thank you.
How did it go? And how did you find a team to work with? Like, if this is still an issue, you know?
Oh, look, the first thing I did was I always assembled an A team. Like, firstly, Sir John, right? You bring in, because like I said, artists of color always learn how to do makeup on everyone, right?
Oh, he was your key makeup artist?
And every time I'm doing a show, I always tend to go with artists of color because just innate. There is no option. Like, if you're an artist of color, you must learn how to do everybody. If right. on the flip side, they don't need to learn how to do you. It's not a requirement, right? So, you know, my makeup artist, my key makeup was Sir John, you know, man of color. My key hairstylist was Rachel, woman of color. She can make any hair type. She can go from dreadlocks to twists to bantu knots mm-hmm. to waves to bed hair. That's what every stylist should be like, right? So when I'm doing any big project, they were the same team that worked with me on my Coming to America project that was so Afrique,
so
right?
Cool.
And they delivered that and they came back in and delivered a project that was so diverse and multicultural and international, right? And so that's the power. And that's what I want every makeup artist and every hairstylist to be like, where I don't have to keep going to the stylist or artist of color. Obviously, I would always support stylists. I always love using predominant teams of color. So regardless, I would still support. But I wish and I hope for a world where everybody can be a Sir John and do makeup on whoever.
So do you think that's going to change? Because, you know, with the brands, and I realize that, like, they're not, you know, it's so big because it's about education. It's about training. This is not like a standardized brand thing where, you know, the brands can all look at each other and quickly say, okay, you know, CoverGirl's got 50 shades, you know, Fenty's got 50 plus shades. And then they all kind of align, you know, it's different than brands and artistry. But I feel like, when we talk about foundation shade ranges, the brands kind of quickly got in line. And mm-hmm. now it's a sea change and it's unacceptable to not offer a diverse shade range. But with yes. artistry, it seems like it is still acceptable to only be able to work within certain parameters, both with yes. hair and, as we're talking about now, with makeup. Why yes. is it not really changing? I realize because, you're not an artist, but like, I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, the artists will do what the people paying them are asking for, right? That's why I go, in the end of the world, the green makes the world go round, right? And that's the truth. If artists weren't getting booked, if they were only one-sided, they would make themselves all-rounded, right? And that's just how it works, right? So everything still comes back to the industry and the ecosystem that has not required that of them, right? Mm-hmm. Brands creating 40 shades of foundation is very simple. It's literally the easiest thing you can do, right? Because all they did is just go and copy and paste, is go buy brands like mine, buy Fenty, buy whatever, buy Makeup Forever, buy MAC, and just replicate it, right? It's super easy. It doesn't cost anything.
I'm absolutely not belittling the you know, it's very hard to do hair. You know, hair, yeah, exactly. I'm not being like, well, why can't you do braids? You know, like it's a tremendous skill.
But also, you don't have to, you know, a lot of stylists can't create braids, but they can style braids. You don't have to be the one braiding the hair because, to be honest, imagine trying to braid. This takes 10 hours. You can't braid that on set, right? So if a person is coming in braids, I would already come with my braids and I just needed to style the braids. So it's actually not that hard, right? And I think on this other side, why that's not happening is now this is actually the intent. And that's why I go, it comes from the companies and the people who are hiring. They don't care. The marketing person writes a brief out. They couldn't be bothered. They're not even going to cast a model of color. So who cares, right? So it's not a problem for them. It's never been a problem. You know, even up till now, people don't actually notice about brands. Most brands, when they have campaigns, don't even use their own products in their campaign. Fact.
Yeah.
I will repeat that again. Most brands will come and say, I'm doing a shoot for a mascara and not even use that mascara in the shoot. They would just get the makeup artist and then the marketer just sits on the side. They don't really care. Like when makeup artists come to my shoot, they find me difficult because I insist they must use my product. Can you believe that? I am called a crazy, difficult person because I booked you to come and do a campaign for my brand. And I'm asking you to actually use the product and only the product in doing that campaign. And so it shows you how much you're not even used to hearing that, right? So it's the brands creating this ecosystem because they're not requiring this of makeup artists. If the brand was going, hey, I'm shooting like every of my shoot, the first part on the brief is you're going to be having multiple models from all around the world. No model is going to leave there feeling like garbage, right? And instead, what this brands and this ecosystem, better is agents, even Fashion Week, all of them, ask every model of color. They will talk to you about bringing their own foundations there. They will talk to you about styling their hair themselves and coming there. They will talk to you about doing their own makeup because the brands who have hired you know, a brand who's doing the show has deemed that the black models don't matter. As long as you can get Gigi Hadid on the runway, that's all that matters. Every other person can get lost for all we care, right? And so I think that's what's causing the problem.
Oh my
so
God.
We can't blame the artists. We have to blame the ecosystem that has not required that of artists, because if they were losing jobs because you can't do makeup for models of color, or losing it because you can't, you know, pretty much literally braids, you pack it up and put a band on it. It's not that complicated, right?
Right.
If you were like, I lose the gig for that, guess what? You would have put an extra 40 hours studying and practicing on how to do that, because it's not that complicated.
Right. It's their livelihood hasn't depended on it yet.
No, exactly. And that's what needs to change, right?
Yep.
The second brands start prioritizing, and even when now they're hiring models, but they're not treating all models equal on set. That's the truth, right? They're still treating, one of my shoots I was doing early this year, and we were trying to style the model to look like Grace Jones. That was the inspiration. And so this makeup artist had put a wig on her and styled the wig to look like Grace Jones. And the model actually was giving feedback to this makeup artist, hairstylist, saying, no, I want you to use my actual hair. My hair actually looks better doing this style, because naturally it looks like that. All you just need to do is trim around it and style it properly. This makeup artist was so, a hairstylist was so mad, stormed to me to come and expected me to come and tear that model down and tell the model, you get what you get, right? Because the truth is, the model was right. It looked cheap. You know, it didn't look great, right? But
like a short wig with a fade is not going to be the same. I don't know what look you were doing.
She was wearing a weird kind of crown or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the hairdresser and all of them, the whole production crew, stomped to me to tell me how
difficult. Usually they love doing cutting hair and doing, this should be a dream for a hairstylist.
But that's why they just wanted to do it around their wig or whatever. And this person was like, no, use my actual hair. It's going to give you a better result than this wig, right? And so the fact that the crew and them all felt like, oh, we're going to come get Sharon and she's going to put you in your place, right? That's what they assumed was going to happen. Yeah. And then I walked on the set and I looked at her. I was like, she's right. Style her hair. And guess what? They finally styled her hair and it looked absolutely beautiful. But the hairstylist actually had to walk off for like 20 minutes to go calm down and then came back, calmed down like a professional and did it, right? If I was not in that room, that girl would have been shut down straight away. She would have been called problematic, which means even next time she wouldn't have got booked for the shoots.
Right.
For saying something that was so true. It's like, you know, you
so
having
horrible.
This long, beautiful hair and somebody says, put it in a wig so we can put a wig of the exact same hair on you. But now you're saying, because my hair is wrapped in it, the wig is starting from there. And the person is telling you like, yeah, it's just going to be what it is. And you tell them, no, you can just curl my hair and it will do this. And the person's like, you know, that's the reality of what that ask was. But if I wasn't there as a person of color to understand that, that girl would have been shut down, called problematic, and she wouldn't have been booked for future gigs. And that's why most models of color are quiet. So that's why I go, it's the companies. The companies are at the be all and end all.
Yeah. This all makes perfect sense. Listen, we want to know, before we let you go, we got to know some of your favorite products. They can be from your line, but of course we want to know some, you know,
Lines? You have multiple lines now to choose from.
Tell us, you know, what you love, what you can't live without.
Oh my God. Very, very tough question. It's like asking a mother to pick her favorite children. Very difficult. I'm a skin person. I always will be. Actually, one of the things recently, because for me, that's the honest truth, it changes. Like even within my range, I have favorites at different points in time. But right now, one of the things I'm so obsessed with, I just created this dry wipes. And the reason I'm so obsessed with it is because it's been something that's been bothering me for years. Everybody who knows me knows I despise wet wipes. The only thing I despise almost as much as wet wipes is powders, right? Actual like setting powders. I despise powders and I despise wet wipes, because wet wipes, firstly on your skin, they're just terrible. They just dry, dehydrate your skin to make sure they don't go. Because if you think about it, a wet wipe is wet, it's moist, and it's put in an environment where you open and you close it. That thing should go moldy, like instantly. The reason it doesn't go moldy is because of all the stuff they put in it to make it not go moldy. And that's
so you wanted like a preservative-free dry wipe.
Dry wipes, and one that's better for the planet. And I made it in the end.
I'm sorry, but what do you use it for? I'm not picturing how to use this.
Oh my God, it's amazing. So it's cotton-based, right? It's actually just made out of pure cotton. It's already been pre-infused with argan oil, and that's actually what the remover is. When you're ready to use it, you just put it under a tap, just wet it, and that thing removes your makeup faster,
more effectively than a wipe. And things like
it removes
that.
Makeup. And also you can use it just to clean, rehydrate your face. Like it's like going to a spa. Nice. You know, when you go to a spa and they do that on your face and it just feels so good. So that's me now. Like even today I'm not wearing makeup, but you can see I'm oily. The day I get home, I just take those wipes, put it on the warm water and just around
your
my
skin
face.
Looks good. I like your skin. Your
thank
so
you.
Beautiful.
Thank you. So that is okay. Literally right now like my favorite thing because I'm always like wiping my face with it. And then outside that, everybody knows I'm a skin gal, like, you know. So I would say my Say What foundation always, because it's both my skincare and my foundation at once. And then a non-Alma Beauty product that I really love. I mean, I've talked about this many times in places. Dr. Sebar skincare. They've got this mask, this heat activated exfoliating mask. That thing is like everything. Like it is everything. Anybody who's not in that, I threw away. I stopped using scrubs years ago and I swapped into this product and it's been like literally, it just melts, especially me oily skin, it just melts everything off your face. You use it 2-3 times a week and that's the life. And for me, everybody knows my skincare is simple. It's that. It's a very, very, very gentle foam wash. We go straight into vitamin C. I'm crazy about vitamin C. I just made one. There's 20% with niacinamide and hyaluronic acid. Oh, you see me. Like, this is where I get my kicks off, right? And so it'll be Dr. Sebar's exfoliating mask is my non-Alma Beauty product that I can't leave without.
Okay. Fat Mascara 5. What beauty product do you first remember falling in love with?
Maybelline Big Lash, Great Lash Mascara.
Classic. If there was one rule you wish everybody would follow, what would it be?
Be yourself, love yourself. Everyone's taken.
Love yourself, everyone's taken?
Everyone else taken. Like, right? Are you? How can I try and be you? You're already you, right? So that's like...
Oh, I get it. I thought, you know,
it's like everyone's taken. Every other slot is gone. The only slot available is you. So be you and
may
love
as well.
You. There is no other option. It. So whether you like you or not, love you, that's all you're going to get. It's only one life. That's it. Like, so yeah.
what's your favorite snack, Sharon?
I would have to say fries. Not French fries. I hate them skinny. I need steak cut fries. Thick, crunchy on the outside, nice and juicy on the inside. That's it.
Like a chip. I get it. Okay.
Yes.
What is your most played song on your playlist right now?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would say there's two songs that actually, no, as of today, it's probably really weird. A few weeks ago, I remembered a song and I've been playing it on repeat. It's Mr. President's Coco Jumbo. I know you remember that song. Yeah, 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 Coco Jumbo, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just, it was a song when
also,
I was
Sharon,
young.
You can sing.
Oh, stop
I,
it.
I just, no, that was like, I was like, if I had to sing a verse right now, it wouldn't sound like that.
I can definitely see why you had like, you know, why there was, you have a musical past.
A little bit, exactly.
Yeah, last question. If there was to be a movie made of your life, or the TV series, as we've discussed, who would be the narrator?
Oh, it has to be Maya Angelou. We have to revive her from the grave and just get her to do it. That's probably why I can't do this, because it has to be Maya Angelou, that voice.
So then we just can't.
Exactly. My life is so chaotic. You need a calm, poised voice. And that is the perfect backdrop to it. They can't be, getting voice. Somebody all like, when on screen, all that's going on is, So you need it to be like Sharon going like, hey, Revlon, I'm a totally an entrepreneur. And Maya Angelou is like, and the entrepreneur in her kicked in, you know? It sort of balances it out and makes it quite posh, you know? So, yeah.
She'd be the yin to your yang. I love it. Sharon, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a delight.
Thank you, Sharon.
No, thank you. It was so good. Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.